All right, so welcome everybody. My name is Christopher Stonoff. I'm the VP of Technical Management for Lieberman Software. I've been with this company for 13 years, and I've helped develop the privileged identity management products that we offer and helped define some of the items that come along when you think about this space in general. We will be talking a little bit about the company, what it means when we talk about privileged access, and a concept of really just dealing with cyber losses in terms of how you can actually minimize them with a stark reality that, frankly, you're not going to be able to actually stop it, no matter what they tell you about next-gen firewalls and everything else. And when you think about next-gen firewalls and antivirus, you realize that every single headline that you have heard about this year and any year prior, every single one of them had firewalls, right? And every single one of them had antivirus, and every single one of them had personnel training, right? Local firewalls, remote firewalls, IDS, IPS, FireMon, FireEye, everything was on fire and people were getting alerts and nobody knew what to do about it. Point is, these things by themselves are great. They help keep honest people honest, but they don't actually stop the behavior that we're trying to stop. They don't help really deal with what happens next now that we've detected these things. And these are what we're going to talk about here. And if you look at Target and Home Depot and some of those other guys, you know for a fact that they also had a password vault in place protecting credentials. You know that they had all these things out there, right? Anybody want to disagree with that statement in any way, shape, or form? I'm all ears. So what do today's attacks look like? And some of this y'all are familiar with, right? They do some basic external reconnaissance. Little footprint of you with Nmap or Nessus or any of the other free tools out there that they can find. They move on a little bit deeper with some sort of an initial compromise. They find the weakest link in your chain. They always manage to find it, whether that's a person, whether that's the fact that every single item in your network has default credentials. You know, if you think about your Drax, your lights out devices, they have a password of root with Calvin, right? And then they establish the foothold. They get that first account. Just a quick show of hands for how many would be willing to admit it. If you were to think about your entire network and the workstations and the servers and the devices, how many of you know for a fact that you've got something out there with the credentials that came from the factory? Just a quick show of hands. All right. A lot of hands and a lot of sheepish smiles. I like it. Now, beyond that, how many of you might even go so far as to admit that, well, you know, we've got 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 systems, and frankly, they were all deployed with the same image, and they probably all still got the same passwords across every single one of them for the built-in admin, built-in root, anything else. Okay? Again, less hands, but I see some low ones down there. Again, because we know what this means, right? You take a foothold on one, you've literally got access to the rest. Because, well, frankly, Windows doesn't care, right? Your admin here, your admin there. If it's the same password, you go right through. Linux, well, they're a little better on that until you start talking SSH keys. But we go from there. And then from there, they start the initial reconnaissance, and then they start exfiltrating data, right? The average time for breach before capture was, what, 240-odd days? It's a long time that they're sitting in there. Or in the case of certain aerospace contractors here in the U.S., a couple years exfiltrating gigabytes of fighter plans. You're familiar with these headlines. I'm sure some of you are. So what it is that Lieberman Software helps do for you is to deal with these privileged identities, okay? And the idea is very simple. If everything no longer has the same credentials and they're rotated exceptionally frequently, and I don't mean like once a year type frequently, I literally mean in some cases hours, maybe even minutes, depending on the credentials that we're talking about, then that really does stop these people from moving around. Right? It makes it so they make so much noise that you're going to be able to find them, to capture them, to kick them out, or maybe just watch them and see what they're actually going after. And if you do all that, well, then we start learning about more zero days and all these other exploits that people are doing. So it's a lot more. And then that, of course, stops further movement. Now, you've heard the term automation. How many of you would agree that if you take a term like automation, that should generally mean all you should really have to do is maybe make a couple of settings and hit the switch and say go? Anybody agree that's a pretty good term for automation here? Or do you believe automation means that you should be running all kinds of tools by hand all the time to keep your product up to date so that it can do the things that it says it can do out of the box? Meaning you're there still doing the work just with a new interface. Which would you rather have? A or B, right? And in terms of thinking about how fast these attacks spread, automation is key. And think about what your networks look like, right? Now, some of you might own a real finite scope of your network, and you say, I'm responsible for just the workstations, and some of you say, I'm responsible for just the servers, and some of you even just the network devices and so on. But there's so much more that people have access to. So many more places that these credentials exist. Now again, when I say credentials, understand I'm not talking you and me necessarily, although we are certainly part of the problem, and I got lots of stories about that too. But we are talking administrator, we are talking root, we are talking SA, we are talking system, right? And the list goes on. And then you talk about service accounts. How do you find it? How do you touch it? How do you deal with it? So automation starts with a discovery process. Discovery in the Lieberman software case means let's look at all your sources of truth, right? You've got maybe SCOM, you've got some sort of directory, some sort of asset management system, in many cases multiple sources of truth dealing with different types of platforms. Maybe some of that's even in the cloud. How many of you use an Azure or AWS for a lot of your infrastructure, right? So that directory in and of itself also contains a lot of information about your systems and your accounts and the access. So we tie into these locations. That brings us the systems. Then we start connecting to the systems. What accounts are on them? How are those accounts used and distributed, right? It's not just change the password for the account. It's change the password for the account, update all the references, the scripts, the tasks, the program, the middleware, right? The services, the connectors, all the stuff that your identity and access management system used to provide SSO and to provision your users. Those are the credentials we're talking about. All the stuff that we don't use on a daily basis, but that makes our lives actually happen. Remediate. Once you have an accounting of these systems, well, now you've got a lot of questions answered, but you probably also got a lot more. For example, one recent test case was real fun. They gave us a network to go ahead and do a scan. I said, this one's small. We've got about 2,500 accounts in this domain. And then some other guy says, no, we've got more like 25,000. I said, okay, well, let's scan it and see. And by the time we hit 1.1 million accounts, we had an idea of the scale of how far off these guys were about the reality of their network. And this goes on for numbers of systems. This goes on for service accounts. In another scenario, that discovery showed at one customer, you know, I'll call the guy Bob because I can't remember his real name, but Bob had left the company, we might say he was quitted 5 years prior, but his account was still being used to run their Tivoli identity and access management system that was being used to provision users every single day, literally running all the services and other connectors that were out there. Anybody care to admit that they might have a similar problem? Well, it's funny because until you actually take a look with that with discovery, whether on-prem or in the cloud, you're not going to be able to truthfully answer that. You give it a best guess. And that's what we can expect with the tools that we've had to this point. And the point is remediate. Start fixing those problems. We give you the visibility to see it. We also give you the tools to do it. And that also means start actually changing the passwords. God forbid you have an incident where somebody comes into your network uninvited and starts moving laterally through it. What are you going to do to respond to stop that? You're going to pull the plug on the one system? No problem. They got 10,000 more just like it. Right? So start rotating every single credential and synchronize those changes across all of those dependencies. Next, for those of you that deal with PCI and NERC and FERC and SOX and GLBA and whatever other regulations out there, all those things say, if you really break them down, is guarantee what accounts had access to the data and when, and who had access to those accounts and when that access was removed and what they did with that access. Now, the auditors are getting smarter than they were even just a couple years ago, right? The auditors know that they can't just look at that one system that you gave them and said, here, check my point-in-time compliance here. They want to start testing controls. They want to be able to restore a system and say, prove you've been changing passwords every single month like you say you have. We want to go back and actually look at every system and make sure that we're not able to get in with that root and Calvin account. So once we have that, we're going to delegate people the ability to come in and get this information when they need it. So that tells us, one, when they got it. Two, they're going to supply the reasons and ticket numbers and incidents that go along with it. Then we're going to see what they did with it, possibly by recording sessions, maybe with our SIM feeds. When they're done with it, that password gets checked in by them, or if they just simply forget, it gets rotated. So now we got a whole frame of reference about when they got it, what they did with it, why they did what they did, and also, very importantly, when that access was removed, all wrapped up in a nice, neat place that your auditors will be looking for. So that means now, as a result of simple, good security that really didn't require you beyond the setup, you now actually achieve full compliance. Well, that's a nice thing. Because frankly, if you've looked at all these hacks, every single one of those people that was hacked in some way, shape, or form also had achieved full compliance, but they didn't have good security. Kind of interesting to think about that. Bad guys don't care if you're compliant. And of course, we're going to track every single movement throughout this process. Okay. So now, when you think about lateral movement, there's a simple concept of, one, I'm going to break into one box and make an assumption that administrator here with this password is the same administrator that's there with that password. Or I'm going to do a pass the hash attack where I log into a Windows system, extract the LSA secrets, right, that are cached as soon as you log into a system locally or remotely and just start moving. And you know that MFA doesn't protect you against that type of attack, right? Multi-factor authentication. You can have MFA all day long, but once you start hitting the network, the systems don't care. You've been authenticated. That's kind of scary too, isn't it? Right? So, and then how about golden ticket? Any of you had to deal with a Kerberos attack, a golden ticket attack? Show of hands. See, just a couple of hands here. For those of you that aren't aware, Kerberos attack means that once I compromise the Kerberos account for your forest, for your domain, I can go ahead and just become anybody I want. And frankly, rotating an administrator password, let alone storing it in a static vault, means that it really doesn't matter because at that point I can just generate new tickets and become anybody else anytime I want, whenever I want, and there's nothing you can do to stop me unless you start actually dealing with rotation of that password for the Kerberos account. And you do it twice in a row. Forces urgent replication and invalidates every ticket that's out there. All things that we give you. Now, with the concept of what is privileged identity management, understand again that this is not the same as an identity and access management system. Right, this is not talking about you and me. This is the missing piece of it. Right, so from here, you have a privileged identity management system that's going to go out, one, find the systems that you have out there, answer those questions. What didn't I know about my network? Two, what didn't I know about the systems? And start touching all your platforms. It covers SSH key management. It covers service account management. And then you need to take feeds because you need to be able to respond to those incidents as they occur. Again, think about what we already know about the target breach. They had the perimeter defenses sending off alerts. How many alerts did they get every single minute coming in? Hey, something bad's happening. And they've only got so many admins. What are they going to do? Look at every single email? What course of action are they going to take? That means your system also has to respond to those feeds, has to be able to take input and react. And it means that you can't take a system that it might be able to do 15 to 20 machines per minute. You have to have a system that can do thousands of machines per minute and can scale out just by adding more nodes, right? It's about responsiveness, okay? And you need orchestration for that too. Now, as far as platforms go, again, this covers more than just Windows and Linux. You got to understand this, right? You have databases. Those things have their own credentials. You got middleware. They have their own credentials. Your websites, God forbid you have hard-coded stuff, right? I know you've got hard-coded stuff in web config files and other config files, but how many of you know for a fact that you've got hard-coded credentials compiled into executables? Anybody want to admit to that one? A couple. Okay. So what do you do about those, right? Can you do anything about those? Yes, you can. It's just the amount of work goes up, right? But at least I can get you to a better place. So it covers everything. So also, a couple of things here. You're going to hear the word at these shows or in your marketing materials about a vault. Would you state that a vault is a safe place to store stuff? I mean, generally speaking, if you think of the term vault, yeah, it's a safe place to store stuff. But does a vault change anything? Does it really change the picture, or does it just keep what you put in it? Right? Think about what that term actually means. You're generally talking static storage when you talk about a vault. Highly extensible means you can add this up or out as you need to. Handling networks of any size. Our largest single customer has over 1.3 million endpoints deployed for a single installation. Doesn't take a whole lot to do it, it's just infrastructure. and quite a few more between there and the 100,000 mark. Rapid time to value. How fast can you deploy this? What would you think would be reasonable? If you guys are sitting there looking at the headlines, how many of you think it should take 6 months or a year or 2 years to get a product in place to even start getting a look at what you've got? Does that seem reasonable? Show of hands. 2 years, reasonable? 1 week. How about 5 minutes before we're ready to start looking? Right? But you need that time to value. And time to value also means that I'm not going to monopolize your time manipulating a tool. Right? I don't want to just move the problem from the scripts that you were writing to some new interface that now has to be maintained. I want you to give us settings so that it can go out and do its business. And of course, scalability. So for Lieberman Software, the company that I've been with for so long, the product that we are going to show you today is called Enterprise Random Password Manager. And I'll walk you through some admin stuff, and I'll walk you through some end user stuff for this product. But it's been around for a very long time, built on a lot of very interesting technology. All right? And like we said, with good security, you will get good compliance, not necessarily the other way around. We have a whole lot of different customers in all kinds of verticals, including some of the folks that make those standards that a lot of you all have to live up to. So we go from there. And now, the moment I know you've been waiting for, the actual live demonstration where anything can and occasionally does happen. All right, so after this, we'll have a period for Q&A, so please hold your questions till then, okay? And we'll go through. So for show of hands in the room, and I need this to help me kind of guide the demo at this point, how many of you would say that you're more worried about what the end users see as opposed to what the administrators see? End users first? Small portion, okay, and then admins first? A lot larger hand showing. Okay, I will show it both. I just want to make sure I show you in the right order here, okay? So what we're going to start with is the admin piece, which, yes, is not the prettiest fat client you've ever seen in your life. But in this case, since the end users aren't seeing it, this is a place where functionality is going to come over. And this is not sharing the whole thing, is it? This is a place where end users are not going to ever see this. So we don't really concern ourselves too much with how pretty it actually looks. There we go. There we are. Like we said, we're looking at any platforms, and for those of you looking down those list of nodes, how well you can see that, starting from the top, Windows, Linux, Unix, Cisco, things of that nature. And if you're looking at this going, Chris, but I've got Palo Alto. Can you handle Palo Alto? Can you handle Checkpoint? Yes. I'm really only concerned about my ability to SSH or telnet to a device if it's not a Windows machine, the databases, and so on. Now, at this point, technology plays a big part in this. Because people say, well, how do you connect? How do you do what you're doing? Show of hands for the admins in the room. How many of you would say that trying to manage 10,000 systems proactively using WMI scripts is an effective way to manage your network? Anybody? Anybody want to take that bait? Nobody. All right. So it is one of the big differences here. When you think about scalability, think about how a program is written and think about what it does. When we're looking at these, we're using the native APIs, the native mechanisms provided by the systems. And as a result, we don't need agents to deploy this, but we will use whatever the systems provide. So for Windows, that's RPC. For non-Windows, that's SSH. For your directories, it's LDAP or LDAPS, right? Your various middleware has their own mechanisms. And it goes on and on and on like that. Now, what you see starts with creating lists of machines. However many lists you need, that's however many you can create. These lists are in turn populated, perhaps by static entries, perhaps by looking at your Active Directory structure and picking and choosing things from your specific domain, or even cloud services, CMDBs, IP scans, and so on. The point is, you're going to give us some settings to start. Yes, we have to get some systems in here, right? These are the machines that we're going to manage, that we're going to do something to. Now, once you have that, the idea is that these management sets then update themselves on a regular basis, adding and removing systems. Now, think about your life cycle. This is, again, that whole point. What does automation really mean? Because if I was to look at, I'm going to make one assumption here, that everybody's using Active Directory for today, or something like it, right? Think about your life cycle. We go dev to test to prod, and in some places retirement, right before a system comes offline. So maybe it's in one OU, then it's moved to the next OU, then it's moved to the next OU. And at different stages, you expect different people to have different types of access, right? Well, in this scenario, with these management sets, they're targeting these various OUs. As you put a system in the dev OU, The dev users now have access to it. The job frequency and cycling targets the management set. So as the jobs run, they're looking at what's in that set right now today and put those policies on it. As you move the system from the next OU into from dev into test, now we want the test user to have access, and the dev users should no longer have it. So you update your Active Directory. Guess what we do automatically, behind the scenes, without human intervention? We do the same thing, and the right people gain access. And as it moves from test to prod, you see the pattern here? And you haven't done anything but what you've already been doing, which is just simply manipulate Active Directory. This is the start of automation. The next stage is find the systems, tell me about what's on them. Now, I'll pick on Windows here, but certainly when we get to the Q&A part, anybody wants to see anything about Linux or any other platforms up here, I've got just about everything running on this demo environment. What accounts are on these machines? Anybody want to commit to having over 1 million accounts in their Active Directory? Okay, so we're probably amongst friends in this case, as terms of what we can handle. We've gone a lot bigger than that, but 1 million is generally where we start our load testing here. Now, with the accounts, you'll find funny things. For example, if we was to take an account like this one here, LSC Admin, which is my admin account, how many of you have an account like this? Password set to never expire, password is 720 days old or worse, and is being logged in with frequently by God knows who. Probably a few of you. And just one shared experience here for anybody in the government sector, you might want to bow your heads in shame at this point, because in some of your scans, we've come across with passwords over 18 years. And for those of you doing math, that means, yes, this was upgraded from NT4. So, you know, a lot of things don't change. You just forget about it, you know. You just don't have the time. Things creep in. Now, better yet, when I look at these accounts, and mind you again, no agents to do this. This is just a query out to the system. The next part is, how is that account used for anything? What is it used for? Services, tasks, com. Now, again, as a competitive differentiator here, if you look at what the other guys are doing, they give you a little tool. Some people call it dynamic network something or other, right? Some people call it just the scanner tool. But again, when you look at these and you say, well, gee whiz, they're using WMI, which we've all already agreed is not the best way to start running and discovering your network. The next thing is, what can they discover? Well, we already know that amongst any population of systems, there's potentially, you know, hundreds of really known locations, right? And a lot of these just come down to scripts and specific APIs. But in terms of well-defined things, when they're looking at, say, 5 out of 20, what about the rest of your network? What happens then when you rotate the password, right? Did they not discover the other 15 locations that could have been used, right? Well, in my case, I'm going to look at all those 20 locations, and I'm going to have a lot of flexible connectors. That's out of the box. There's nothing extra up there. And I show this to you to drive home a point. If you're only discovering part of your network, you're going to break it when you try changing it. You're not in a better foothold than you were before. Now, when you actually look at these guys, there's another really important issue for you here, which is, when was this information discovered? Again, this speaks to the automation point. Because here they're going to say to you, well, yeah, run this tool, get the information. Oh, don't forget to export it, import it, map it, tell us what you want to do with the stuff that we found. And if you want to run your password change again next month, make sure you run this whole process again, and again, and again. Now, for any of you that have any kind of scale, let's just say 1,000 machines, and a company averages 1% refresh, right, do the math, that means 100 systems getting replaced with 100 new systems is 200 changes. Really what that means is, only Saturday and Sunday, machines are not getting rotated in or out of your network. And the rest of the time, Monday through Friday, something's either coming online or offline. Now again, I ask the question, do you want to be in that product every day, keeping your network up to date, keeping this tool up to date, when really what you want to be doing is going home and spending time with your family, your kids, watching whatever your favorite show is, right? What sounds better to you? I know, it's a loaded question in most cases. There's some people who'd simply rather hide out, and I get that. For me, I'd really rather go home and work only 80 hours a week, not 120. You know, that's my thing. But the point is that when we actually do such an enrollment and we say, let's take an account like this and let's set it with a 76-character password and let's make it really complex. Why 76? Because why not? It sounded good. I mean, I can do 127, I can do 100, but you know, you tell me what works for you. But 76 looks good. Think about where you're going to propagate this password to. Is it used in scripts? Is it used by older HPUX systems, which is only 8 characters and you can't have a number or a symbol in the first character position, right? Is it a DRAC device? The only characters you can use is a hyphen and an underscore, right? Or an Oracle password. You can't use a single tick, right, in the password without doing all kinds of escape sequences on that password. The policy and what you can do becomes very important, right? Next, scope. Remember we talked about management sets in the beginning. Well, this management set is going to target, or this job is going to target, not just the basic password change, but also what systems are leveraging this account. Now, these systems, for my purposes, yes, they're all on my laptop here, but in reality, they're going to be in your cloud. They're going to be in DMZs. They're going to be in WAN links across the pond, right? So there's other architecture conversations that'll go into this, and I'll show you some of that. But by and large, the idea is that set gets updated automatically. Every time this job runs, it looks at that set that's been updated automatically. The point is you don't have to keep mapping all this out. Now, when you say, let's run this job, what are we going to look at? Well, I've got, again, my jobs are already including a number of items to start with, like services, tasks, comm objects, SQL reporting services, and a few other items, even automatic logon accounts. How many of you have like internet kiosks or automation systems that have to automatically log in? Thank you, a few of you. So for those scenarios, right, what do you do? In a lot of cases, you're like, oh yeah, let me go into AD, then let me go over to the machine and either run the commands or run some scripts or go into the registry, depending on your Windows version, and do my magic. Here I'm actually going to be able to take care of it for you. And then you say, well, let's go ahead and schedule this. Now, I'll run it right now. But again, this is that place where some of our customers are literally looking at every single shift change within their department on a daily basis is getting a new set of passwords. That's the type of data that they're protecting. In some cases, there's a few that are doing some of these every hour. Now, it's not a one-size-all-fits policy. Again, consider your accounts, consider your environment. But the point is, we're going to get you going from nothing in many cases. And something's typically better than nothing. So let's start. So what's going to happen in this job is this is first going to go out to the domain. Make sure I got the scope. I got the scope. Yay. All right. First, this will go out to the domain, set the password for the account in the domain. Then it will begin scanning all those other systems in parallel, seeing what's going on. Right? What does it look like right now? And for those of you that can read all that scrolling text across the bottom, what you're actually witnessing is the logging of the scanning that's going on as it talks to each of those machines and says, tell me about your services right now. Tell me about your comm. Tell me about your IIS. And for anything that's running a service, you'll like this one too. Think about your process. Quick show of hands. Yay, if you believe it matters, if the service is clustered, raise your hand when you change a service account password. Okay, for the rest of you, I'm assuming you've never changed a clustered service then, because if you change a clustered service that is part of a cluster and you don't use the right APIs, you will simply destroy the cluster. You will break it. Then you'll have to fix it, and then you've got nothing. So in this case, we actually look to see, is the service clustered? Is the service running? If it's running, we're going to restart it. But if we're going to restart it, does it have dependencies? Do those dependencies have dependencies? Is any of that stuff running? All that magic, all that stuff you had to account for by hand, or that could simply never be accounted for, what do you know? It's accounted for completely with automation. Now you can imagine that happening there. Remember what I showed you, that this list would have been populated beforehand, September 21st, but you also just witnessed the system scan every item in there. And for those of you that are really curious, I will show you the log in full detail. Probably not a great time here. But I'll be happy to show you the log to show you exactly what it looked like and what it did. But it is scanning it. Now think about this. That means that from September 21st to now, and think about your own environment, did you add new servers? Are they using that account? Did you remove servers from your list that shouldn't try to be managed anymore? Did you change the account usage from this account to a new account? Because if you didn't remember to update your other password vault that says they can do this, well, guess what you just did? You either locked out account A or you locked out account B, which means disruption of service. That's a bad thing. This is why people can't use the vault successfully at scale, at the very least, to deal with these accounts. And this is the point that I want to get you past. Okay. Now, that same concept covers cloud-based information, covers Linux, covers Unix. And again, going through the Linux-Unix side of the house, okay, just to show you some other fun things that we can look at. How about the list of SSH keys on there and begin to rotate those? How about the SSH daemon settings? And all this information can be reported on here, folks. But the idea is, why is root allowed access here but not there? Is there some inconsistency? These are the points that we want to help you out, to help you identify your privileged identity issues before they become an actual issue. Now, with that said, that's basically what the management piece looks like. Okay, so from there, we'll go ahead and make our way into the end user side. Now, the end user side is looking at this going, okay, we've got various users and roles, and I can do this from PowerShell, I can do this from web services as either SOAP or REST, I can do this from the website. Again, I understand I'm showing you the ugly admin console right now, the part that end users don't see. Right, but the idea is very simple. Take an identity, whether it's a certificate or radius-based user, roles, cloud mapping, whatever, give them specific rights to specific lists of machines, or even to specific accounts on specific machines, or just to specific machines in general, and say, here's what you can do with this account. Now, what that looks like from the end user perspective is they will come now to a very pretty looking website, and they'll log in. Now, you're looking at this going, okay, I see a username and password, looks like it might be able to do integrated authentication. Yes, it can do all that. Yes, we can consume from LDAP. Yes, again, certificates work. Yes, multi-factor authentication works. RSA, SafeNet, InfoCrypt, phone factor, anything radius-based. My question to you on this matter, though, is how many of you would use a SAML provider, say ADFS or Ping or Okta or anything else like that? Anybody? Okay. So OAuth, SAML, also supported. We can also consume their assertions. We can also filter their assertions. Now, consider this, that when you take an assertion out of SAML, right, what is it that the provider says? Here's Bob, and Bob is also a domain admin. Sure he is. We trust the person who set that up, not with respect to this. We can't actually filter all that stuff out and say, nope, Bob is really only a user in the scope of this product. Now, what they see once they log in, well, that's all nice and based on the delegations that you've given them. Do they see dashboards? Do they have favorites? Now, at this point, the only question that we got for you is, are people going to request this access? Are they going to get this access? Or are they going to launch an application? Now, there's a lot of different use cases here, what people want to do, but we'll show you a few different items. If we say somebody wants a password, remember, up to this point, all your passwords were the same. Nobody knew that they had to actually follow a process to use the account. They just used the account. But now you're saying, come here. So we want to make this as easy as possible. So again, consider there is orchestration. Consider we're really only a few clicks away from getting the access that we need. So when we say somebody wants that password, let's say for the LSC service account, how long was that password we set it to? Anybody remember? 76. So watch this. We say recover the password, we put in our beyond clever reason for getting that password. If you have this tied into a ticketing system, and since we're here at the Microsoft show, I know everybody's using System Center Service Manager, and those of you that aren't here are using ServiceNow or Remedy or something like that. But in any case, you put in your incident number, if it all matches up, if it all lines up, you say recover that password, and lo and behold, uh-oh, we failed to log in, uh-oh. I'm guessing one of my systems is offline here today, as far as this goes. Well, the live demonstration bit, right? Foiled again. Give me just a moment. We'll just go ahead and turn that off right now. All right, quick update. And one more time. that's probably good enough. And there we go. There's our 76-character password. Now, would you want to type that in? Probably not. I see a lot of head shaking on this, but consider a couple of things here. One, that is the real password. That is the one that was last successfully set on the machine. It's not one we're going to try and do right now, because, of course, the whole concept is break, fix, fire, call us, not online. We can't actually manage it right now. We need to go deal with it. Now, that password is going to be good for a short period of time, let's say 2 hours to start. Now, if you do nothing else but go home and make spaghetti, that password will check itself in and rotate to a brand new 76-character value. On the other hand, if you're done before then, you check it in. And it does the same thing, rotates it to a new value. Now, consider this in terms of your contractors, your, you know, the interns, or just general users of these systems. They're not supposed to take this information with them. That's the whole point of what the regulations say. And in terms of you guys, you probably don't want Nikki New Guy coming in and taking this information home. Look at Terry Childs, what happened in San Francisco, the only guy that knew the credentials. What did he do? Well, when he's getting fired, he held them hostage for 2 weeks. Nobody got paid. He was sitting in jail, but he didn't care. Break into the systems, have fun. This would have prevented that. Right? And better yet, how about the actual phonetic pronunciation? Oh, wait, this is 92. Wrong password there. So, right, what is it actually doing at this point? Right, it's reading out to us. Now, any of you have to read passwords to people over the phone or wonder, is that a pipe, an L, a 1, an I? Well, we'll help you out here. So now, let's take that. Let's say that the here we are with our systems. We've seen the passwords. We know that in a short while that password's going to rotate to a brand new value. But what if I don't need the credential, Chris? What if I don't want people to ever see the credential and get to a real live session on the desktop or into that terminal? What can we do then? Well, for this, we offer the following. And I know my database is online, so I'm going to take this one. I've got a favorite setup. This is going to launch SQL Management Studio. It's going to appear to come from my desktop. It's going to look like a native app. What's actually going to happen here behind the scenes as we launch this application is this will connect my user to a jump server. The jump server will launch SQL Management Studio, stream it back to my desktop. It kind of looks native, doesn't it? But I'm logged in right now as the SA account. If you look at the highlighted portion in the top left, I'm in as the SA account on that MSDB server. And right now, the fact that I'm sitting here watching this happen, this is all being recorded. So as we do fun things in this session, let's say we connect to the ERPM database. There we are. And we select a bunch of stuff. Okay, probably not going to do that. Let's see. How about star from TBL? Stored passwords. I'll give you one guess. This is my database. The table name is called TBL Stored Passwords. Anybody care to take a stab at what's actually in this table? Only slightly sarcastic. All right. So when we say run it, this is what the table looks like. There's your information. And there's the AES encrypted values. Am I worried about you guys seeing this? No. Because you know why? That key that I used to generate all this stuff, that was actually created at the time I set this up. It'll be different than your key. Am I worried about what happens if I don't have a backup of the database in that key? Yeah, probably so, because Lieberman software can't actually backdoor the system for you. One of the benefits for you of us not using a rootkit is we actually can't compromise your system, unlike some other folks, but I digress. Now, everything that I've done at this point, like we said, this has all been nice and recorded and audited. So when I say, let's go ahead and close that session, the system has already tracked the fact that I logged in. The system has tracked the fact that I launched an application, that I've retrieved passwords, and so on. So what happened behind the scenes? Well, from the auditing perspective, the system is also capturing and saying, hey, there's LSC admin, went after that SA account, did a remote app launch link at this time from this IP. That's an IPv6 address, for those of you wondering what all those silly characters are. And then when we say, what did they actually do? Well, let's show you. There we go. So we sat there for a little while. All right, select a bunch of stuff. Sorry, just fast-forwarding through this here. Look familiar? Now, a funny thing happens when people know they're being watched, doesn't it? The behavior changes from, they'll never know if I do this, yeah, they're probably going to watch me and ask me questions about why I did that. And, you know, when you see commands getting run on customers' videos that say things like rm-bigrf/etsy, you know, or scripts being launched, there's a lot of things that people start finding out about their user population, about what they're actually doing when they think nobody's watching, and it starts to fill itself out. Now, with this auditing, there's another great thing that you get out of this. Self-help for the auditor, right? How many of you had to give reports to the auditors? Okay, it's always fun to collect it, right? It's a lot more fun if you can just say, hey, log in here and get this information. So establish them a role. Let them look at the reports. Let them look at the auditing information and let them self-help. Funny story. Guy had exactly that scenario. Auditor asked for the reports. He said, they're right here. Log in with your domain credentials and do your bit. A month later, the auditor says, where's my reports that I asked you for in this email a month ago? He says, well, here's the email I sent you a month ago, along with the login credentials, and I'm looking at the audit logs, which I've exported for your benefit, Mr. Auditor, which show you actually have never logged into the system. Now, isn't it nice to just kind of flip that around a little bit from time to time, just to give it back to them? Anyways, I digress. The point here is that we want to make this as simple as possible. Now, another little fun item in here, beyond just basic password management, because we did talk about privileged identity management, is what about group memberships? What can you do about that? Because here we're going to draw a little contrast. Some of you have been through processes and read reports, and they say things to you like, you must also have privileged user management. And whatever acronym they give to that, what they're talking about is controlling what people can do once they're in a session, right? Whether it's running one account or running another. And some of that can be addressed just by giving them access to specific applications. That's nice. And the other side of that is, well, if we don't have that separate tool, you know, what do we do? Or even if we do have that tool, can we actually use it? How many of you have tried to actually set up that privileged user management, that command control thing, right, where you can run command 1, command 2, command 3, but nothing else? A couple of you. May I ask just thumbs up or thumbs down or thumbs sideways, was it fully successful? Sideways. All right, that's the best answer I've ever gotten. Certainly probably one of the more honest ones. But the basic premise is, what difference does it make if you limit the command somebody can run through a proxy if they can still get right to the system? What difference does it make? What difference does it make if every single account still has the same credential and I just bypass the system? None. Right? Hopefully this is what you're hearing in your head. It makes no difference at all. So the happy middle ground, the easy middle ground that you can achieve actually comes with this, where you can say for those systems, what I'd rather do, instead of manipulating and deploying agents and maintaining agents and setting up all kinds of other rules that may or may not make sense and are probably going to need exceptions anyways, is I can let users self-help themselves. And I can say, let them just elevate their own account. So I predefine users and the groups that they can go to. That's easy enough. The groups exist. The users exist. All I got to do is say, enable it and do it. And when the user clicks that button, we will, behind the scenes, as per the blue message at the bottom, add them to a predefined group for a predefined period of time and then forcibly remove them. Well, that's an easy middle ground to make, doesn't it? No changes to the systems, no changes to Active Directory, achieves the immediate goal of giving them the type of access they need when they need it and removing it when it's done. That's all the high points. That's everything we need to deal with. So now you've got the passwords under control. You're letting users in with the type of access they need or the types of applications that they need, and we're auditing every single step of it. And so far, you've been witnessing a pretty live demonstration complete with all kinds of foobars. Okay, one. I'll give you one. Right? But we try and make it as easy as possible for the rest of you. Now, the premise, does it change at all whether we're on-prem or in the cloud? Right? Do you think that this honestly changes this process if we're in the cloud? Show of hands, it changes when we're in the cloud? Good. Nobody should be raising their hands now because it doesn't. You still run infrastructure in the cloud. It's still a Windows box in the cloud. It's still just another directory in the cloud. The only question that you really need to ask is that infrastructure fully connected all the time, or is it air-gapped? Is it fully separate? right? That's really the only thing to define for yourself. Because all that that does is identify when you deploy something like this, where does it go? Does it go in the cloud? Does it go on-prem? Does it go in both at the same time, maybe? Right? How many of you have DMZs in your network? Show of hands. Okay, a lot of you. Now, for your DMZs, do you manage them the same way that you manage your internal network where the users are? Would you define your ability to change a password as, I see a lot of shaking heads, by the way, you don't manage them the same. Would you define that those systems are, in terms of password rotation and management, more or less managed than your internal infrastructure? More? More, all right. About the same, some less. It's funny, this is the first time I got answers all over the range here. Usually it's less because they're secure in that little air gap network, right? But again, they have to be managed just like anything else. So again, how easy are you going to make that, right? How much do you want to put into this infrastructure? Some folks go so far as to say, yep, it's a DMZ, but we've opened up port 445 and all the ephemeral ports between the internal network and the DMZ, but it's secure because there's a firewall and an IDS system. Not exactly a DMZ anymore once you do that, is it? Right? And some people say, well, that's Bob's job. Bob does it. Bob's another department. Bob gets around, doesn't he? Like Johnny's uncle. You hear all kinds of bad things about Johnny. Now let's hear all kinds of things about Bob. So anyways, the point here is when you look at the infrastructure, the things that you can do, you can go from a very simple layout of minimal systems, minimal infrastructure, and you can get yourself into a very interesting type of network. Now, this is one of our customers. They spoke for us at Gartner. I don't need to call out their names again. But this is one of their deployments. And what you're looking at, this is an MSP. And for you, you might think of those bottom networks as DMZs. The top portion of the network was their own internal services. The middle portion, defined as median DMZ, is the shared infrastructure for all their clients for them that was partitioned off otherwise. And then down at the bottom, you have the individual customers. Now for you, this would represent maybe different network locations across the world, maybe different DMZs within your own air gap network. And the idea of how do you handle these is actually really very simple. You have a choice, of course, to fully air gap it, no communication, stand up another instance in there. But if you do want to manage it all as one sort of giant process, you can do that too. And down here, what we would ask you for is one server right there. And on that one server, we'll install what's called a zone processor. It's a Windows service consisting of two executables and about four or five DLLs to run it. And it does all the work locally in that DMZ. It pulls the database for all of its information. And when it's done with that work, it writes the information back to that database. Right? You notice I'm saying that this zone processor talks only to the database. Now think about the infrastructure that I've shown you so far, right? A console and a website. I've also mentioned that there's a web service. All those items talk to the database. So if I lose the website, I lose the web service, I lose the console, I can still change passwords. My system is still running in the background. It's still keeping you safe. You lose the zone processor, it's no problem because we deployed this as an HA architecture. We had two, three, four, five zone processors. All right, maybe not that much, but we had a few, right, dealing with an outage. You lose one website, no problem, you've got another. The architecture is designed such that you can lose pretty much any single component and still keep running. And friends, as we think about this architecture with SQL Server backending this, or Azure SQL if you prefer, right, in the cloud, running everywhere around the globe, right? Cloud services are always fun. What happens there? What do you do to make an Azure cloud highly available? Anybody? Nothing, it's already done. It's done for you. All you did was hook up to it, and you're already connecting wherever you need to go. But if it is on-prem SQL, right, it might be a mirror, it might be a database availability group. It's just your standard stuff. So you don't have to learn how to troubleshoot, you don't have to learn how to deploy. It's all standard networking. There's no agents. We talked about the full automation so far. Well, it sounds pretty complete, doesn't it? Sounds like there's not a whole lot of work that we have to do to get this going. Well, that's pretty true. Most customers are deployed very quick. You know how quick? Usually days, weeks, maybe the longest one's a few months. I've never seen anything take longer than two. So again, I ask you back from the very beginning, how long should it take to get yourself protected with something like this? Is a year? Is 2 years a good time frame? And for those of you that have been through deployments with some of these products, you know that that's not an unrealistic question. Okay. Now, the other side, how many of you would rather work in a GUI versus a command line or web service? Okay. A couple of you. How many? So then the rest of you would rather do orchestration, you'd rather use PowerShell or scripting to automate this, right? Okay. Glad you asked about it. So let me tell you. So with the product, we do ship a full-blown SOAP-based web service with a WSDL, which means you can bring it in and let the interfaces self-build. We give you a REST-based web service leveraging JSON, so you can write to that if you prefer. Now think about your different platforms. You have a program that you own that is going to go ahead and talk back to a database, right? Maybe it's a website transaction. We're doing credit card processing, order processing, whatever. It needs credentials to talk to the database. So rather than putting that hard-coded password in a .NET config file, or rather than putting that password into the ASP page, as I know some of you have done, at least based on conversations I've had over time, why not have that system come out and call into us and actually retrieve the password? Why not, if we're doing scripting, why not just go ahead and authenticate and then get the password for that account we need? Now, okay, everything's working. Fingers crossed. There we go. And across the bottom scrolls our very long password. I don't know how to zoom in on this. But right, but there it is. Very simple. Now think about this again. New systems come online. Let the product know about it because they're not joined to a directory anywhere we can discover. So, but you've got build scripts doing it. Let us know. You have your FireMon, your FireEye systems, your perimeter defenses saying, hey, something bad is happening. Let them talk to this web service. Let them start spinning passwords right now, right? You have your identity and access management system. We just provisioned Bob's cousin, Dale Jr. Don't want to confuse him with senior. We just provisioned Dale. Let's make sure he has access to the right systems. Let's make sure that with our identity and governance access controls, right, SailPoint and everybody else out there, that they're maintaining that. So they look at the directories. They look at us. They say, nope, something doesn't match. Wrong role. Remove the permissions. All that's controlled through this orchestration. And you start to see how the difference of a platform that's dealing with this privileged identity management is much different than a vault, right, where you're statically going in and maintaining the list of systems, where you're statically maintaining the passwords, where you're trying to use WMI to achieve access to a few systems. It's a big difference. It's an absolutely big difference in what's going on out there. So from there, I believe I'm just about done with my presentation. With a little bit of time to go, I'd like to open this up to you, please, for Q&A. I'd be happy to show you any portion of this product, anything else that we missed, any other platforms you'd like to see. Yes, sir. Yeah, there's microphones on either side, please. I have one question over here.
Yeah, I have a, I don't know if it's on or not. Oh, yep, it is. So you talked some about like changing passwords on systems.
Yes.
What if you have a bunch of systems, some are connected to the network at one time and some are offline? Mm-hmm. How do you prevent them from, when they come back online, then like locking the domain password out or something like that?
Okay, so the question there was if we have some systems that are online and some systems that are offline at the point where we perform the password rotation, how would we prevent them from locking out the password? So would the assumption then be that the account is a service account that's being used on those systems? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. All righty. So in the case where you have those systems that are offline when their change happens, so obviously we're not talking in most cases laptops, right, or things like that. These would just be servers that are down. There's a few things that are going to happen during that password change. I was actually kind of hoping I might get a failure during the rotation that I could talk about a little more. But one is that the product will go into a state of retry for those failed systems. Two is that it will send alerts. Now, alerts might be in the form of a ticket, might be in the form of an email, any number of outputs at that point. Might even take an additional action, so we can actually run other programs at that point. Now, what happens with the unresponsive system? Well, it'll come online and hopefully we can hit it at that point. Based on how much time has passed, or it might be time for another rotation depending on how much time has passed. But ultimately, you will be aware, and the really answer is going to depend on how long it was offline compared to when the job ran. What's the ultimate next action going to be? Now, one other thing that I will actually show you at this point is a concept called account pooling. And this is designed to help answer some of that very specific question that you addressed there. So what an account pool does within the scope of this product is we can say, here's a list of accounts. In terms of permissions and rights and access, they are the same. So if we're going to go rotate the password for this account here, which let's say is service pool number 2, what's going to happen is, and everything is running a service pool 2 right now, what's going to happen is we won't actually touch service pool 2. Instead, what's going to happen is this product will go ahead and rotate the password of the next account in the list. And it's going to try and set everything that it can, meaning the systems that are online, to run as the new account. So now in your environment, you got the systems that were sick and offline running as service pool 2 with a good password because it didn't get rotated. And then you've got the new systems that were online running as service pool 3. Now again, as the retry issues go on, we'll try and get the other ones updated. But if for any reason the next change time rolls around and not everybody's been updated, well, the next step is to rotate back through service pool 1, right, and again try and hit them all. So keep going, so keep that rotation moving so we try not to end up in that situation, or at least we envelop enough time to get through and address the issues at hand. Right, the other ones that we are able to talk to are still productive at the same time. That's correct. Good question. Thank you. Yes, sir.
My question is about the vault. You mentioned earlier at the beginning of your talk about how a vault is no different because you store all the passwords. They're still static.
That's right.
The other issue with a vault is, of course, if I have the key to the vault, I have all the passwords.
That's correct.
If I have the key to this tool, I now have the ability to change and manage all the passwords. How is that, and that's from that perspective, how different is this product from a vault?
Okay, so the question was, where a vault is basically statically maintaining everything, how does an active rotation system such as this alleviate some of those problems? Good question. So when you look at the vault in the generic case, keep in mind that you have not only the keys to the vault, but anybody that was involved at any portion in time with those password changes also leverages that information, let alone anybody with the master access to the vault. So that's going to be where the conversation needs to start. In this case, when this product, one, is going out and rotating passwords, nobody knows what the credentials are, not even the person who did it. There was no point in time where you saw me define the password, rather I set criteria. So even as the administrator of this tool, I don't come away knowing anything. Now, the follow-up question is, well, can't you give yourself access to learn it? And the answer is, of course. That'll also generate a series of audit events, audit alerts, potential tickets. So it will really never go unnoticed. And then beyond that, if you get only slightly creative, you can make it so that the launching of this console, let alone the website, also goes through and has to be launched through the app launcher. So again, there's also even a recorded session beyond that. So there's a lot of effective controls, not to mention the additional fact of leveraging multi-factor authentication, various permissions, and various delegations to even access the console or any other portion of it. So try and take you much further than where you were. Absolutely. Thank you. Good question. Any questions from anybody else? Anything you didn't see? Perhaps about Linux, databases, cloud? Any further examples? No? Okay. All righty. So then the last thing I'm going to ask you to do with our remaining few minutes here is to go ahead and stop by our booth, booth 1404. We'd be happy to go more in depth, anything that you do want to know that you didn't want to ask here. Right? Sign up for a free risk assessment, our website, liebsoft.com. And thank you very much, everybody.